The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
Is your underwear in need of a refresh? Meet Tomboy X, makers of the original boxer briefs for women, queer-founded and queer-run. Tomboy X designs sustainable, gender-inclusive underwear and apparel in sizes 3 extra small to 6 extra large. Use code IHEART at checkout for 20% off your first purchase only at tomboyx.com. Shop now on TomboyX.com.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class, a production of iHeartRadio. Hello and happy Friday. I'm Holly Fry.
And I'm Tracy V. Wilson.
Move over, Charles Adams. I have a new history crush, and it's Alexis Soyer.
Hooray!
I love everything about him. I love everything about him. I love that he woke up with no pants on and became famous for it. Listen, he seems like he was very fun.
Yeah.
I love that he, whether this is really where it starts or not, that he set up a lot of the early chef tropes, right?
Mm-hmm,
like
for sure.
We have... I mean, he could have written Kitchen Confidential, but it would have probably been less edgy and just more fun.
I was thinking that as I was reading it. Maybe not that exact thing, but I was like, these 7 or 8 things that I've, that like, this all sounds like the stories we hear of kitchens and a particular variety of chef today.
I love that he, if the story is true, was so ridiculously charming that with people brandishing guns at him, he not only got out of it, but they were all in love with him by the end. Mm-hmm. I also want to talk about his wife, though, because Emma, while they were only married for 5 years, it sounds like she was really his perfect match and was herself very funny. She, at one point, there's a story that she went to visit him at the Reform Club and waited in his office, and he was busy in the kitchen, and she waited for an hour, and then she had had it, and she left. But on her way out, she told one of the members of the staff, like, oh, I left my calling card in his office. And what she had actually done was taken out her crayons and drawn a portrait of herself in the office on the wall.
Ah.
And Alexi loved it so much that he just put glass over it and a frame and like kept it there for the remainder of his time at the club, which I think is so charming. She also is really interesting. There's not a ton of information about her enough to make an episode, but she, even when she was very, very young, was already doing abolitionist paintings and was one of those people that was doing portraiture of enslaved people to try to convey their humanity to white people that did not get it. So she was just, in and of herself, a fascinating person. And the fact that that was his choice of like, this is the one for me, kind of cements him as great in my book.
Mm-hmm.
That tulip story.
I love the tulip story. I was just thinking about the tulip story.
That is some cute business.
That's very cute.
It's so sweet. And I think also is a good insight into their like ridiculous cuteness.
Yeah.
He was known throughout his life as a practical joker, which I think is why she thought it would be funny, and he did too, to like draw on his office walls. There was a story I didn't include in this episode about when he was in Crimea and he was traveling with a colleague, and they were at a Russian camp that had been abandoned, and they decided kind of on a dare that they would try some of the bread that they found there left over. And they had each taken a bite, and Alexei said, "Oh no, it's poison." And his colleague freaked out, and Alexei was laughing because it was not poison. He was just being a jerk, but like,
oh,
he was a hardcore practical joker. Which I think is really funny. One of the books that I used for research, which is that one we referenced by Ruth Brandon called The People's Chef, she does a really interesting approach to his biography where she includes, like, each of the chapters is themed to a course of a meal, and she includes at least one recipe of his as part of it, and like an entree into talking about like that phase of his life. And she apparently made the famine soup, and she did not love it.
Oh yeah. It sounds tasty to me.
I mean, that sounds like a good solid soup recipe, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't sound fancy, but I could see that being super yummy. Apparently she didn't find it yummy.
Yeah. It's got a lot of things in it that I feel like would work well together. And, I do love a barley soup. I haven't made it in a long time because as I've gotten older, its ingredients don't agree with my digestion so much anymore. But like a mushroom and barley soup that has like a really hearty flavor to it. It reminded me a bit of that, even though it was based on drippings and cut beef.
I mean, I will send you the recipe and you can alter it and try it if you want. There's an interesting side road to go down here that isn't, again, it's not something that got explored a lot, but in his writings about his time in Ireland, it seems clear that he felt like things were a little upside down there, not maybe in the ways you're thinking. Like, he was like, why are these people using fish, a protein source, just as fertilizer for potatoes when they could eat the fish and have better nutrition? Like, why won't they let me teach them how to prep even what they think are mediocre fish to actually be tasty and good for them? Like, he was definitely having some struggles around how that was all working. But of course, there's that bigger issue of like people being trapped in the cycle of needing to produce potatoes to be shipped away to other countries, or they would lose everything. Like, there are bigger things in play than what he could necessarily see.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a lot of, it's been so long since we did those episodes that I haven't re-listened to them to see how they hold up, but we have a two-parter on the famine, and there was so much stuff that was going on that was like, people were sustaining themselves on potatoes because that was what gave them enough time to grow the other crops that were required for exports. And then during the famine, even though people were starving to death, were not permitted to keep any of those crops for themselves.
Right.
So, yeah, there's a whole much bigger social and political and economic layer to that than why are they using the fish as fertilizer?
Yeah. I also love that he was super inventive. There was another story that I read about him very late in his life, which kind of made me adore him all the more, where he was so no nonsense. Like, apparently he had been riding a horse to visit a friend and he got sort of thrown, but his foot was still stuck in the stirrup and he got dragged for a while. Mm-hmm. And like, he wasn't old. He was in his 50s at that point, but when the horse stopped and he got free, he wasn't like, oh, I just got dragged by a horse, I'm going home. He was like, let me just straighten my suit because I still have a lunch appointment. He still went.
Okay, I have an affinity for him now. Because one time, some years ago, I was going to some kind of like continuing education training workshop kind of thing that I don't even remember what the topic was of now. Because I was walking from the MARTA station to where the class was happening in Atlanta, which is a place that is often not pedestrian friendly. And there was no sidewalk where I was. I was walking on the shoulder of the road, of a big road too, a road that by all rights should have more sidewalks, fewer car lanes. And I stepped into a hole in full view of this line of cars and just fell, and all of my stuff went flying. And I picked myself up and brushed myself off and continued walking the rest of the way to my workshop.
Yeah.
And like tidied myself up in the bathroom when I got there and like went on. It became clear I was seriously injured. Not the correct course of action to have done.
You know. Yeah,
I was not that seriously injured. It was all fine. I was fine eventually. But yeah.
I love him so much. I loved researching him. There are also, it didn't come up in the episode because it's weird and it's hard to know what's going on. There was a thing that happened very late in his life, and some accounts suggest that his illness had made him not entirely himself. Like, he was doing some uncharacteristic things and engaging in some behaviors that didn't always make sense. But he apparently wrote Florence Nightingale, not exactly a love letter, but very much a very flowery admiration letter that could be interpreted that way after he had gotten back. And there are people that are like, was he in love with Florence Nightingale? Maybe? I mean, they went through a lot together, truthfully. Mm-hmm. Like, they were in some dire situations, but unclear. He really was all for Emma his whole life, even though he was pretty infatuated with Fanny Cerrito, I think. Yeah, I mean, it was Emma for him forever.
Yeah, yeah.
Forever. Tulips. And the most famous portraits you will see of him are ones that his wife made. And they're beautiful. She really was like an extraordinary portraitist. So I love the idea that, even though I hate that she died so young, I love the idea that for 5 years they were like the cool it couple of London. Mm. You know, she with her French chef husband and he with his cool art wife. Like, who wouldn't want to hang out with them? I do. Build the time machine. I'm ready for a visit.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be, with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel, for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about Comfort Hotels. Imagine you're a family road tripper, waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer founded and run for over 10 years, You can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
Looking to part ways with complicated, expensive, and uncertain shipping? Then give your business the edge it needs with USPS Ground Advantage shipping from the United States Postal Service. Keep everything simple with clear upfront pricing and no unexpected surcharges. Keep things affordable with some of the lowest prices out there. And keep it all reliable with on-time ground shipments. It's time to turn shipping to your advantage. Learn how at USPS.com/advantage. USPS Ground Advantage. Simple, affordable, reliable.
We talked about Mercator projections on the show this week.
We sure did.
I am guessing that you grew up like I did, seeing Mercator projection maps hanging on the wall in school with a gigantic Greenland.
Yes, 100%.
We didn't specifically say this in the podcast, but like the most accurate way to see what the world looks like is a globe, a well-made globe, a well-made accurate globe, because the globe is roughly spherical and the Earth is roughly spherical. And that's going to be the most accurate way to do it. When I was a child, our public library had a gigantic globe. It was like, I remember it being bigger than, like, taller than we were. Like, we had to reach way up. And then it also had some relief elements to it. So, like, the Himalayas were on there that you could just physically touch. Yeah. And, man, we loved that globe a lot.
Oh, I love a good globe.
Surely they do not have that same globe 40 years later. It would be wildly out of date in terms of countries now. Many things are very different since then. But man, I loved that globe. But yeah, if I try to call up a flat map image of the world in my head, I definitely see a Mercator projection.
Oh, 100%. I remember as a child, I had a particularly good in like middle school, or what some people would call junior high, like the low end of that, early middle school. I had a particularly good social studies teacher, and she was very clear, like, this map is messed up, you guys, but it's what we have. And she would try to show us other maps and how they had worked, but I was a staunch defender of Mercator for the stupidest reason.
Oh, tell me why.
Which is that even as a child, I was like, yes, but when I look at those other maps, there's dead space. And this is more aesthetically pleasing, although I did not know the word aesthetically yet. I was just like, I don't want a map where there's circles and weirdness and left out parts that aren't printed. What a ding-a-ling reason to be obsessed with a map. But maybe one day I will have Mercator printed on fabric and I will make a skirt out of it that will be wrong, wrong, wrong. It'll be
that
great.
Would be fun. Yeah, we had a similar, I feel like this is probably closer to high school, sort of a lesson about different map projections and sort of comparing the pros and cons of different ones. And there was one that is, we did not talk about, but it was one that had sort of like cutouts. So like if you like blow up a balloon of the Earth and then cut pieces so it will lay flatter, we had some like
did
that.
Did you have to do the craft where you cut those out and taped it together to make a little globe?
I don't think we did that, but we did do drawing on the balloon and then stretching out the balloon in different ways.
Oh, we did a little paper craft. It was fun.
I also remember a television show, probably something like Mr. Wizard's World, that was very similarly maps versus globes and Mercator projection versus other stuff and stretching out balloons. One of the explanations I found in doing research of like, here's how to visualize what the Mercator projection was like, take a cylinder, blow up a balloon and draw the world on it, and then put that balloon inside the cylinder and keep inflating it until it has totally filled the inside of the cylinder. And like, that's approximately a cylindrical projection of the world.
Oh.
I was like, that sounds like a fun craft time to do with somebody's children.
Do you ever have that moment when we're working on one of these episodes and your brain clicks together pieces of history that you didn't realize had lined up so closely?
Sometimes.
So in this case, it actually is about a person you referenced in your research, which is Thomas Harriot. But like, I was thinking about how Mercator did his work in the 16th century. I, in my head, would have put that later because we were, if I weren't like, you know, looking it up, I would have just intuited it that it happened more like 17th century, because I remember that, you know, Thomas Harriot and Galileo were first looking through a telescope at the moon in the early 1610s. And so to me, that had to have come first. Like the world of astronomy and how it might impact maps seems like it must be different, particularly considering that we're still using that map, or we were into the 20th century when you and I were in school. And that just, it's one of those weird things where I was like, that is not what I thought was going on concurrently.
Yeah.
And it makes me think about Thomas Harriot's work. As you recall, I have a map that he drew tattooed on my person, which is his first map of the moon. And knowing that he was also sorting this stuff out, but then was drawing very flat maps of, you know, the moon, because it only looked like a disc to him at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he knew it was spherical, but all he could see through a telescope was like
the disc,
the flat image. And
right.
So I wonder if he took any of that into consideration when he was sketching out his first maps of the moon. And I
good question.
I don't know. I don't think we'll ever know.
We've talked about so many things on the podcast over the last many years that when his name came up in the research, I think I told you this story. Like, I just had like a disconnect where my brain was not recalling who that was. And so I was like, why does this name ring a bell? I keep wanting to think he's the person who like was a veterinarian. That's not right at all. Oh, yeah. Like, then it all came together. This has been on my list of things to do for an episode for a while, because it had come up in some previous research, and I was like, I'm going to get back to that at some point. And there is a webcomic called XKCD that occasionally has a bad map projections as the topic. And there was recently a Mercator projection, but with the focus being somewhere else on the map. And I was like, oh yeah, Mercator projection. I should circle back around to that. And then I researched and wrote most of it before we went to Italy and picked back up after we got back from Italy. And I was like, wow, I don't remember any of this because I've been gone for almost 2 weeks.
Oh, maps.
It also made me, it drew my attention to various maps that we saw while in Italy. Like, there were some fascinating maps we saw in the Vatican City Museums. And then also, while I was on the plane, and, you know, sometimes on the plane, there's a screen where you can pull up a map of where you are. I kept looking at it and being like, is this a Mercator projection? Because Greenland looks really big, but not as big as I expect it to on a Mercator projection.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing we didn't really talk about. It's inherently understood, but like, if you're trying to put what's going on a globe on a flat map, like I said, we didn't explicitly state this, but we certainly talked about it. You have to give in some area and be like, well, this isn't going to be right, but it's. Which is why it gets to that thing of like, yes, but which is closest and what are your criteria for closeness in accuracy?
Which wrong thing is acceptable to you in this context?
More incorrect ocean versus more incorrect landmass. There's a concession has to be made, at least one, often more. So it's tricky.
It's just how it works when you're trying to make something that is roughly spherical into something flat. So yeah, I saw a number of very angry forum threads and whatnot about people fiercely defending the Mercator projection because all maps are distorted. And I was like, yes, but there are better options for teaching children what the world looks like, most of which are in use now. But were not when Holly and I were children.
Well, and I think there's a weird thing, and I don't know why this is, like, people get attached to a thing and they think if you say yes, but that's not as accurate as it could be, like, you're somehow trying to insult the map maker or the map. And like, he did great for the information he had at the time. I'm just saying, if you want an accurate thing, that's not the best place to look.
It was a useful map for a particular reason, and that reason was just not hanging on the wall in a third grade classroom. So anyway, maybe we'll have some other map something some point in the future. Whatever's on your plate this weekend, I hope it goes well. We'll be back with a Saturday Classic tomorrow and then some brand new episodes next week. Stuff You Missed in History Class is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Is your underwear in need of a refresh? Meet Tomboy X. Makers of the original boxer briefs for women, queer-founded and queer-run, Tomboy X designs sustainable, gender-inclusive underwear and apparel in sizes 3 extra small to 6 extra large. Use code IHEART at checkout for 20% off your first purchase only at TomboyX.com. Shop now on TomboyX.com.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Paired Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.
Variety is back with its annual Entertainment Marketing Summit on April 24th at the luxurious Beverly Hilton Hotel in Los Angeles. This must-attend event for entertainment marketers will feature conversations with leaders from Netflix, Paramount, Activision, Mattel, LA Rams, Google, and more. Plus, an exclusive keynote conversation with Paris Hilton. The networking opportunities are unbeatable. And once you register, you can start chatting with other registrants to plan a meetup at the lunch or cocktail hour. Limited tickets are available, so secure your spot today at events.variety.com.